Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Representative Dave Lobsack joins us again on this program. The Democrat has served the U.S. House of Representatives for Iowa's 2nd Congressional District since 2007. We had a redistricting take place in 2010, so that the borders there have changed. But currently, the 2nd District covers most of the southeastern part of the state, including Davenport, Iowa City, Clinton, Burlington, Fort Madison, Muscatine. So if you, especially in that district, if you'd like to join us with your question for Congressman Lobsack, please feel free to do so now, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Congressman Lobsack, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on, Ben. I appreciate it.
Washington, I don't know what the weather is like there. Here we've got a rainy day. In many parts of Iowa, it is unwelcome rain. We'll talk about flood protection in a moment, but I wanted to, to get your reaction, if I could, Congressman, to the reports now breaking about this FBI report. I'll just read from the New York Times off my screen, the first couple paragraphs. Of former FBI Director James B. Comey was insubordinate in his handling of the investigation of Hillary Clinton during the 2016 presidential election. A critical Justice Department report has concluded, according to officials and others who saw or were briefed on it. But the report by the department's Inspector General, Michael E. Horowitz, does not challenge the decision not to prosecute Mrs. Clinton, nor does it conclude that political bias at the FBI influenced that decision, the officials said. Your reaction, Congressman?
Well, I haven't had a chance to read the reports. You might imagine I did see that it just came out. I was in a meeting prior to this. There's no question that what James Comey did was out of the ordinary, to say the least. And, you know, I have to look at that report and analyze myself. I do think it's important, though, that folks on both sides of the aisle look at this report and take it seriously. This was the Inspector General's report. This is a nonpartisan report in that sense. And quite honestly, I think we should let the chips fall where they may. If James Comey did something that he shouldn't have done, then we need to take that into account. And if at the same time what happened here was not some kind of favoritism or something towards one candidate or another, then I think we have to pay attention to that. Again, I just haven't had a chance to look at the report in any detail like you. I just saw the headlines. But I just think we have to take a deep breath when it comes to any of these kinds of issues. You know, we see folks on both sides of the aisle beating the drums for one thing or another when it comes to, you know, what happened in 2016. And I think the IG report is probably going to be about as nonpartisan and I hope a rational approach to all this as anything we've seen, you know, in recent weeks, months, and years.
Congressman Lobsack, this week, you're well aware, I'm sure, marked the 10th year anniversary since the historic crest of the Cedar River in Cedar Rapids. Now, you no longer represent Cedar Rapids, but you did when this flood happened. The federal government has authorized but not appropriated some $80 million in flood protection for the city. Have you been actively involved in trying to get that money appropriated? What is the holdup?
Great question, Ben. I have not forgotten about Cedar Rapids, even though I don't represent Cedar Rapids any longer. All of that has a special place in my heart, given that I was out there at the time mucking out basements and doing what I could, not just here in Congress, but otherwise as well, volunteering. And, you know, we had such a great spirit of volunteerism at that time that I think has continued to hold sway in the state of Iowa. And we saw a lot of people come from the outside as well. No, I've been pressing hard along with, you know, the Congressman Blum, along with our two senators. I'm never going to let go of what's happening in Cedar Rapids and what did happen, what I think we have to have happen to mitigate and minimize future flooding down the road. In fact, just yesterday I had a conversation with the Office of Management and Budget Director, Mick Mulvaney, a former colleague of mine, and, you know, OMB plays an instrumental role in all this as well. I'm glad to hear that the Army Corps has just said that, you know, that this project should be ranking fairly high. We want it to get done. There's no question about that. But I got to tell you, beyond that, we got to be thinking long term about this. You know, I still have my legislation out there that would establish a national flood center. And personally, I think the University of Iowa Flood Center has done such a great job that they'd be a great location for it, although I can't mandate that in the legislation. But we've got, there's no question that our climate is changing. There's no question that we're seeing more extreme events. You know, whether it's that terrible heat that we saw over Memorial Day, and now it's going to repeat itself over the weekend. This is very early in the season, just the ups and downs, the erratic nature of weather is largely due to climate change, I think. But when we look at the future, we've got to take that into account. But I do believe finally that the best approach is a watershed approach, and I know that a lot of people are looking at that right now. It's not; it shouldn't be just one particular location, whether it's Cedar Rapids or somewhere else. We have to look up and down the river and manage this up and down the river.
Right. You say we should be taking into account the changes in weather patterns, climate change. Are we, to any extent, in the federal government? Is the Army Corps of Engineers taking into account planning for future flood events based on hard data from our University of Iowa Flood Center, for instance, and other professionals, scientists in the field?
I think more and more they are because, look, even our Defense Department, for example, acknowledges the reality of climate change, and they consider it to be a threat to our national security for a variety of reasons. But beyond that, you know, certainly within the Congress itself, we have our challenges because not everybody here, you know, subscribes to what I believe is the correct notion that climate change is real, that global warming is real. And so I think that has to be a factor, not the only factor, but it has to be a factor. And as I said, taking into account a watershed approach is something that, you know, I know a number of folks at the state level have been talking about that, trying to implement that, because flood walls are not going to be the answer by any means. And so we've got to think about other ways that we can deal with excess water as it happens. And we see what's happening in northern Iowa right now. And, you know, thankfully, it's not to such an extent that it's going to come down the Cedar River and create the same kinds of problems it did in 08 and even since then.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to some politics. Your reaction to primary results thus far last week, primaries in many states, including Iowa. What do you think of the results, and what do you think it means for the midterms?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I think Iowa is going to be a lot more competitive this time, whether it's at the gubernatorial level or some of the congressional races, than anyone could have imagined even a year ago. And you know, as a Democrat, I'm obviously concerned. I'd like to see more Democrats here in the Congress. I'd like to see more Democrats in the state legislature, and I would like to have a Democratic governor. So I think the results have been pretty encouraging, and the turnout was at a record high, obviously, for Democrats. And a big part of that had to do with the congressional primary or the gubernatorial primary that we saw. And when it comes to my own election, I'm feeling good about it. I don't take anything for granted. And, you know, I'm not going to do a tremendous amount of campaigning until later on. I'm just going to do everything I can to continue to work at my job, get around the district, continue to meet with folks as much as I possibly can. That's what I'm most concerned about. I've already had 25 congressmen or coffees with your congressman this year. I had 30 last year. I'm just getting around and listening to folks. I think it's really important all the time to listen to them, but in an election year, it's probably even more important to take into account what they're talking about.
What about the Donald Trump factor? It seems like Republican candidates in the primary who have supported the president have done well. Those who have broken with the president have not. Couple that with a new poll from NBC Wall Street Journal, the president's approval rating moving up to 44% among registered voters, an improvement from 39% in April among adults, registered voters. How do you explain the uptick in the president's approval rating nationwide?
Well, I think it's interesting because I'm kind of a little bit amazed that it's not even higher, given that, you know, the economy seems to be doing well. Certainly, you know, the Obama administration laid the groundwork for this recovery, and it's continuing, and I think that's a good thing. You know, with unemployment low, we've got folks, you know, who can find jobs. The problem at the moment, what I hear in my district all the time, is that the jobs that folks have now just aren't as good as what they were prior to the Great Recession in 2008. So we've got to do a lot more on that front, make sure that people get the proper training, make sure that we have the necessary tax and regulatory environment out there for our small businesses in particular. We've just got to make sure that there are the opportunities out there for folks who want to find good jobs to be able to find good jobs. But in a sense, I'm not surprised that his job approval rating has gone up some. There's no question about that. What that bodes for November as far as the election is concerned, I think that election is so far off that we really can't predict. We don't even know from week to week how things are going to go. But I do believe it's going to be a good year for Democrats. I do believe that.
It may be way off, but your opponent in the Republican Party for the 2nd District is aware of it. He actually put a question on my Facebook page for you from Dr. Christopher Peters. Verbatim, this is what he writes. Healthcare is the top issue for voters in 2018. U.S. healthcare costs have been outpacing other countries since the early 1980s and were not improved with the passage of the Affordable Care Act. What ideas does Dave have to address rising healthcare costs?
Well, my answer to that is going to be that when I have debates with Dr. Chris Peters, we will be talking about these issues and we'll each have our own ideas. In the meantime, there'll be plenty of ideas that we're both going to be throwing out, but we're not at the debate stage yet, and I'll leave it at that.
You're not going to address health care at all?
Oh, of course I am, but I'll do it when the time comes.
All right. Let's go to Bill in Sac City writing this question. Congressman Scott Pruitt and the EPA have given a waiver for ethanol blending to many oil refineries. I think these are the hardship waivers that he must be referring to. Are there any steps that our state's congressional delegation could take to effect change to this policy? Asks Bill in Sac City.
That's a great question. Scott Pruitt does have the authority to grant these waivers for these small refineries, refineries that don't produce more than 75,000 gallons a year. And the problem we have right now is that he's not being transparent at all in terms of telling us which refineries were granted these waivers. The biofuels industry estimates that right now probably over 1 billion gallons of ethanol have been lost to the market because of this. So while we have the renewable fuel standard in place, basically, Scott Pruitt is not living up to the letter of the law at this point as far as being the head of the EPA and allowing these refineries to basically get out of their obligation that they have under the law. And I have requested directly from Scott Pruitt, and I did this in a hearing where I grilled him for 5 minutes, the 5 minutes I had allocated, to provide me the information, which specific refineries have been granted these waivers, how many of these waivers have happened, how much does this account for in terms of ethanol production? And again, I have not gotten those answers. I'm glad that our congressional delegation is on this. I'm glad that our senators in particular are on this. Scott Pruitt has to be held accountable for this. He's got a lot of other things that he's done wrong, I think, on the ethics side. But clearly, when it comes to the renewable fuel standard, he's an oil man. He's from Oklahoma. He's been defending oil interests, big oil interests, and that's simply the wrong thing to do. His job is to implement the renewable fuel standard, and I don't believe he's doing it adequately at this point by any means. I actually think he should resign as well.
Representative Dave Loebsack is with us. If you've just joined us, he's been representing the 2nd District of Iowa since 2007. Let's talk about last weekend, which seems news-wise. I don't know if this news cycle acceleration affects you, Congressman, but it sure does for us in the news business. The big blow-up last weekend at the G7 summit in Canada seems quite a while ago, even though it was just days. What are your thoughts on the impact on Iowa if Canada goes through with the retaliatory tariffs they've been threatening?
Well, they're already beginning to do that. Some portions of the pig are going to be affected here, pork bellies and shoulders, I believe. They've already slapped some tariffs on those. This is not good for pork farmers. I'm going to be meeting with a number of the pork producers here in Washington in the upcoming week or so, and I'm sure that's going to be a big topic of conversation. I've been meeting with farmers in the district on a regular basis about these trade issues, and, you know, I have to say at the outset when the president was threatening tariffs, especially on aluminum and steel, and the concern was there about retaliation, a lot of folks were willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, there's no room for benefit benefit of the doubt at this point. He has, in fact, put these tariffs on these countries. And our biggest trading partners, Canada and Mexico, and they've already begun to retaliate against us. And this is going to hurt our farmers. It's not only going to hurt the farmers, it's going to hurt the manufacturing industries connected to the farmers. And it's going to hurt all those implement dealers out there as well. So it's going to be well over 25% of the economy of Iowa that is now going to be negatively affected by the retaliatory measures that these countries are taking. And I've never been in favor of broad sweeping tariffs across the board. I do believe that we need to take actions against the worst actors out there, and we have to do that in ways that are allowed by the international rules and the international organizations that we, in fact, help establish, like the World Trade Organization. There are ways to do this, and what I'm hearing more and more from folks who are affected by this or anticipate they will be affected in a negative way is that this isn't the right approach, that we've got to do this through the existing mechanisms. Beating other countries over the head is not going to solve the problem. In fact, it's just going to make it worse.
Mm-hmm. Do you sense any support in Congress, bipartisan support? Is there any way to limit the president's ability to negotiate trade deals, to impose tariffs, and which up to this point have been resulting in retaliation?
Well, we saw Senator Bob Corker attempt to do this in the Senate just this week, and he was shut down by his leadership. They refused to let him do this on the floor of the Senate. There's nothing like that, comparable like that, over here in the House at the moment. Unfortunately, and this is why one of the reasons why I do think we have to change the party who is in control for come November. But unfortunately, right now in the House in particular, the Republican Party is not willing to take on the President of the United States on any number of issues. And I talk to a number of these folks on a daily basis, and they're not necessarily happy with what's happening on this front or any number of other fronts, but they're not willing to step up to the plate and to confront the President directly on this. And to the extent to which they're not willing to do that, and in the House they have 240 members and Democrats only have 193, it's very difficult to move forward on this and to hold the president accountable.
Just a few minutes left with Representative Dave Loebsack. A few words on immigration. It sounds like the U.S. House may soon vote on an immigration bill or bills. Do you see anything out there? I know the Republicans, I don't know if it's have shut out the Democrats here. Is there any Republican bill that will get your support, Congressman?
Well, first, let me go back to 2013, if I could, and the Senate passed overwhelmingly a bipartisan immigration reform bill. They got 67 or so votes in the Senate. It came over to the House, and then Speaker John Boehner simply didn't allow a vote on the floor of the House. And at the time, I was calling for a vote on that bill, and I think it would have passed here in the House had there been a vote. And then when Paul Ryan became Speaker, he basically followed the same policy as John Boehner. And now we're in the situation where we are. We're just a couple votes short of forcing on the floor of the House a vote that would have basically put four bills on the floor. And if any one or more had gotten a majority, the one that got the most votes would have been the one that would have passed in the U.S. House. But Speaker Ryan and the other leaders in the Republican Party, they short-circuited that effort. And that was on the part of a lot of so-called moderate Republicans for whom this is very important in their districts. They have heavy, Hispanic populations. And what they decided to do is now put two bills on the floor next week, one very, very conservative bill that the majority of Republicans won't even support in all likelihood, and then, or maybe a majority, but they won't get enough to pass it, and then another yet-to-be-specified bill. I can't make a judgment until I see that bill as to whether I'd vote for that or not, but I can tell you that Speaker Ryan expressed concerns about himself about whether that would pass next week. And the bottom line is that they're not consulting with us Democrats on these bills.
What about specifically on an enforcement? Your party's been very critical of the president's rhetoric on immigration, efforts to prosecute those in the country without proper documentation. Can Congress do anything? Is there support, enough support to change the administration's enforcement tactics without approving legislation?
Well, I think it's going to be very difficult, especially given that, with the Republicans in power not willing to take him on any of these issues, although I was heartened today when When Speaker Ryan did voice his concern about separating families at the border, that inhumane policy that we've seen put into effect by the administration. And look, I think we all can agree that we've got to beef up our border security. There's no question about that. But the question is how to do it, whether to put some huge wall that will cost tens of billions of dollars or do it, you know, through electronic monitoring and other kinds of border security. We should have that debate, I think. And
what about the effectiveness? We're kind of running out of time. Beg your pardon for interrupting.
Sure.
But the president's tough talk has resulted in fewer people crossing the border, making their way here. It seems from the early figures, does it not? Isn't there something to be said now for tough talking by the president? Will you give him credit there?
Actually, we did see the border crossings drop, and that was something that was happening before he came into office as well. But now in recent weeks, we've actually seen an uptick again. Tough talk is one thing, but clearly we've got to make sure that we figure out something on a bipartisan basis where we can come together on this. That's what the American people are demanding of us, that we work together on this issue and all these other issues that are so important for moving this country forward. And I think we can have that conversation. I have it almost daily with members here in the U.S. House. It's the leaders that are not really moving this forward. And I have to say the leadership of both parties are culpable in this at this point, unfortunately, as well.
Okay, we've run out of time. We want to thank you again, Representative Dave Loebsack, for joining us once again here on River to River.
Thank you so much, Ben.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. Podcasting and on-demand audio over the river, River to River, are available at iowapublicradio.org. Thanks to our listeners who chipped in the questions for Representative Loebsack this hour. We'll be, of course, interviewing, sending out invitations for all the major candidates from the major parties challenging the incumbents in the congressional races for the midterm election. That goes without saying. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.